This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Parkinson's disease, it's one of the key targets researchers point to when they talk about an illness that might be helped through the use of stem cell therapy. In the disease, the brain cells responsible for producing the neurotransmitter dopamine, well, those cells die, leading to the gradual loss of control over movement and muscle. In work published this week in the Journal of Clinical Investigation, a group of researchers in Japan report that they have been able to reverse the degeneration in monkeys by growing new dopamine-producing cells from monkey embryonic stem cells and then transplanting those cells back into the brain of the monkey. Joining me now to talk about the work is J. William Langston. He's science director and CEO of the Parkinson's Institute, a research organization in Sunnyvale, California. He wrote a commentary on the new study that appeared this week in the Journal of Clinical Investigation. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Could you describe the experiment for us in a little more in detail?
Why, certainly. Basically, what these researchers did was take embryonic stem cells from monkeys and develop those stem cells into the types of cells that are missing in Parkinson's disease. As you said, dopamine neurons, the neurotransmitter that's missing in Parkinson's. They then took those stem cells that have now been developed into nerve cells that we need for replacement in Parkinson's disease and transplanted those cells into an animal model of Parkinson's, and were actually able to show that those cells survived. They continue to be dopamine nerve cells, and they actually reverse the experimental Parkinsonism in those animals. And that is, I think, a real step forward. The first big roadblock we had in the field of Parkinson's disease was to get stem cells to even turn into dopamine neurons, and that was accomplished about a year ago in several labs. But lo and behold, when these cells were put into animal models, they reverted back to stem cells. So the next barrier we have been facing is how do you get them to stay the type of cells we need to treat a disease? And it looks like these investigators have actually made a step forward in that area.
Can you describe for us what they did to make it work this time?
I could, but it's very complicated.
I'd have to shoot you. Did they always use embryonic stem cells?
Or yes.
But they got it to work this time.
They got it to work this time, and we were really stuck at that point. So that's why I think the importance of this paper, there's a number of caveats. One is that that they still didn't get very many cells to survive. It was a fairly small percent, but it was vastly more than anybody else has been able to do. So you could call that proof of principle. Second, the animals were only allowed to survive a few months, and obviously if we're going to treat Parkinson's, we need to go a lot longer than that. And the third thing is, one of the big worries we have about stem cells, of course, is that these are dividing cells originally and, in theory, could become cancers if they keep developing. So we can't have tumors. Now, the good news here is that there were no tumors, but again, it was a fairly small number of cells, so it could be a larger number of cells longer. There may be a risk there. So we still have a lot ahead of us. I mean, this is not trivial. We're basically attempting to do something that only God has done before, and that's to wire the human brain. So I still think we have a long way to go.
So these stem cells actually rewired that part of the brain in the monkeys?
That's what they have to do. They have to actually start making this transmitter. And I think to really be effective and not to go into overdrive, they've got to reestablish connections with the surrounding host brain cells. There's a lot of experimental evidence with human fetal cell transplants and also in animal studies that can happen. So I always compare it to, if you can imagine, when you build a home, you know, you put the wiring in first and then you put the walls in. And here, trying to rewire your entire home after the house is built is going to be pretty challenging business. And in a sense, that's what we're trying to do in the adult human brain.
And what is the next step then? Where do we go from here?
I think there are a lot of next steps. I think this is, I think, very preliminary. It's just one study. It's not a large number of animals. And as I said, there are a number of real caveats with this study. We need to see this replicated. We need to see other labs do this, achieve this same thing, so we know it's not just one lab and that it's real. Also, I think it's going to be very important to go on to human embryonic stem cells. These researchers used monkey to monkey, if you will. They got monkey embryonic stem cells, put them into a monkey, which is a very logical place to start. But really, ultimately, we've got to know that we can do this with human embryonic stem cells, and you can do that in monkeys. Now, as you well know, we have certain not scientific obstacles, but political obstacles when it comes to using human embryonic stem cells, and I think that's a whole other subject you may or may not want to get into.
Let's get into it. We get into it all the time, and I've always said that I think if we have a breakthrough in this field,
mm-hmm.
We'll see the walls come tumbling down.
Yes,
to using human embryonic stem cells.
I totally agree with that. In fact, I've often wondered if that's one of the reasons opponents to this fight it so hard, because I think if we have one success with one disease, the tide's going to be impossible to stem. Now, if you're a scientist, if you're a patient with one of these diseases, that's wonderful news. If you oppose this, that's probably not good news. But I think most of us feel the potential is enormous. Obviously, the voters of California feel that way with the recent passage of Prop 71. I think we desperately need one success with one disease, and then I think you're going to see things change dramatically.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that, you know, it was just about a year ago that we heard about the South Korean scientists making stem cells from human embryonic stem cells.
Yeah.
From an embryo.
Right.
And now it's a year later, we have Japanese scientists doing
yes.
this. Does this illustrate how the research has gone abroad, or is it just a coincidence?
No, I think it does. I think it's odd, in Parkinson's at least. This is the second time we've been through this kind of political chill. I call it an ice age for science. We were working with human fetal cells 10, 15 years ago when Ronald Reagan put a complete moratorium on that lasted, I think, 7 years until Clinton came in and overturned that the second day in office. If that set research back 10 years, in my opinion, and we're still suffering the consequences of that and the science we could have learned how to do this with. And I think we're seeing the same thing again now with all of the stem cell research. I think clearly there's much more freedom abroad to push this science forward. It's just going to be fascinating to see what type of kind of punch in the eye this Prop 71 is going to be to mm-hmm. the federal policy, because clearly California is marching ahead.
If you're successful in Parkinson's in the brain, what's different about trying it with, let's say, spinal cord injury or other neurons in
right.
other places?
Well, I think that's going to be more challenging, and it's going to be more challenging, almost back to my carpentry analogy. Parkinson's, it's a very small area of the brain that the critical cells die. So our rewiring job is, in a sense, more focused and easier to do. We may have to pull out a part of only one wall to get in there and fix it. Some of these diseases, Alzheimer's is the one that comes to mind, of course, are much more widespread. So using stem cells in those, it's mechanically going to be much more challenging. There's more areas that need to be fixed. Does that mean we shouldn't try? Absolutely not. But I think that's why Parkinson's is kind of in the forefront here. It's the one that we, I think, have the best shot at making it work. And once that's happened, then you'll see people tackling these others even more aggressively.
Did these stem cells have to come from the same monkey that was treated?
No.
That's interesting.
Yeah. The brain is generally thought to be what we call immunoprivileged. There's a barrier between the blood and the brain, and you can probably get away with a lot more in terms of transplanting cells from a different animal than you could if it was a systemic or, an organ transplant. Ultimately, that question still isn't answered yet. Do we have to immunosuppress?
Was the breakthrough in growing the stem cells or growing a certain kind, or how you put them back in?
Well, I think that's still a little bit of an unknown. Everybody who's been able to grow stem cells, and there's just very few labs that have done this, and get them to turn into dopamine neurons, that took years to do, and as I say, that has been accomplished by several groups in the last year or so. We thought that would be the end of it, but then this new barrier showed up where once you put them in an experimental animal, they went back to being stem cells again. So I think somehow the way they prepared these cells is the difference, and that gets pretty technical.
When you mean prepared them to put them, I guess what I'm driving at
mm-hmm.
is, if you've got a colony of these stem cells, could you not just keep growing them if you've succeeded in growing them a certain way and preparing them?
Yeah,
and then use them for other experiments or treatments.
That's one of the reasons this is so attractive is that in theory you have a perpetual or unlimited source of cells. That's why it could really be a practical treatment for not just one patient, but many patients. That's right.
Yeah, so that's why I'm asking, is the trick in getting them back in to grow or in treating them before you put them back in and while they're still in the dish?
I think it's actually even more complicated than that. I think part of it clearly is the way you treat them in the first place and get them to grow so that they maintain that. A second part of the equation, which is one we haven't really done research on at all and needs a lot of research, is what are the host factors in the brain that are affecting this graft once it gets in? After all, if you think about it, the adult human brain is not used to seeing embryonic cells. And there's probably a lot of chemistry going on there that may affect that graft survival, the fact that these cells continue to be dopamine neurons. Clearly, though, the preparation, how you grow these cells is a factor because this particular research group, without changing the host brain at all, has been able to get them to survive longer. But my opinion, I think we're going to have to solve all of these to get a really successful formula.
Do we have to wait longer to declare it a success?
Yes. I think this the way this is evolving, and again, as I say, this is not trivial science. It's something mankind has never done before, is that every time we solve a breakthrough, a barrier or a bottleneck, a new one is there. And my guess is, just speaking as kind of a seasoned in the trenches scientist, is that this is very cutting edge, and there are going to be lots more unexpected barriers before we get there.
Dr. Langston, I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Certainly.
And good luck to you.
Thank you.
J. William Langston is the scientific director and CEO of the Parkinson's Institute, which is an organization that's in Sunnyvale, California. We're going to take a short break, come back, and change gears and talk about other effects of the terrible tsunami. What about some of the local effects to the environment, to the ecosystem? Stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday from NPR News.